Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go for this, the fifth day of January 2017. Yes, indeed. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the madcap multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. Just click on chat room there at the website, and you will be immediately having selected a screen name and a password. You'll be greeted by Anatole, Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Steve from Georgia Stan, Stockton Larry, VT Blom, Will in Chicago, and of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparty, who here in early January has chosen not to fold space to become man cave. Even Northern California, it's winter sometimes. And apparently, I'm guessing today is one of those times. It's certainly winter here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Virginia, Stan. No getting around that. While it is a toasty 68 degrees here inside the fabulous Horn Studios. Outside, we got 29 and snow that's going to fall all night long and make a mess of things. We get a low tonight of 20, followed by a low tomorrow of 14, a low of Saturday of 11, and a low of Sunday of 8. Looks like it's time to buy some more propane. Yay. Mm-hmm. Which I will probably do this evening when I drive over to pick up Margie from work. Of course, if one is a Walmart worker, one never gets anything approaching full-time wages for some pretty brutal retail work. Here's how it all shakes out. I mean, this is kind of a program note for the evening, and I hope you'll forgive me. But it is snowing like a sumbitch outside. And Margie gets off work at 7:30. So that means that given the sloppy nature of the roads, this is no aspersion casting or anything, but I'm not going to send Agnes out into that good night to go slip, slide, and dip. No. Just no. So I will probably, this program will probably be somewhat truncated, probably somewhere around after 8 p.m. I'll shut things down and go and get Margie so that she doesn't have to sit there and wait for an hour and a half for a ride home from work, at which point in time the roads are only going to get worse. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we try to raise $200 every evening to help keep this program on the air and keep the entire, all the plates spinning on top of all the sticks. you know, in a different world. I don't know. We'd send the limo driver and the Maybach after Margie, but this is while we try to be as professional as possible about the broadcasting itself, we don't have any limos. I mean, in fundraising we joke about the Maybach and the Gulfstream 5 and the Olympic sized swimming pool and Agnes's masseur and cabana person and. That's all a joke. This is, in fact, a broadcast operation that operates on a shoestring. And like I said, we try to raise $200 every evening. Thanks very much to Fab last night, and thanks to Don this afternoon and overnight via subscription. Thanks to James. You know what happened? Well, this happened. What was going to be a $150 fundraising hole resolved. So we've only got the regular $200 to raise this evening, which is an awfully, awfully, awfully good thing. So just, you know, one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13. And yeah, you know what we'll do with that extra half penny? Mm-hmm. We'll put it toward the masseur's tip this month. But all that having been said, if you want to, just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute. We need more than one subscriber for this particular date of the month. So feel free, if you'd like to become a subscriber, just click that little box there at headonradionetwork.com under Contribute. Make this a recurring monthly donation. Fill out the relevant information. Leave the stuff blank about who you work for and what you do and where you do it and why you do it. Just get to the next screen. If you don't want to become a monthly subscriber, that's cool too. Whatever you do to help keep this on the air is fine, because, see, we don't charge anything for this broadcast. If everybody quit contributing, this broadcast would go until the power bill, you know, until the power got cut off and until the internet got cut off and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then it just wouldn't exist anymore. But no one would ever have been charged a single penny, because we're not selling anything here. This is an attempt at community. And so when some people give more than others, it's not a sign of one-upmanship. It's the fact that some people are able to make it possible for people who listen and don't contribute to still listen. And that is deeply appreciated across the board by everyone who is associated with this effort. And by everyone, I mean the entire Horn Family Community Congregation. People who listen, people who call, people who don't call but listen, people who listen but don't call. People who email, people who Facebook, people who tweet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And as I mentioned, no, I don't think anybody would want to leave their family member just sitting around after a busy work shift at Hellmart. I wouldn't. Now, this is, of course, not the big news of the evening. No, the big news of the evening has something to do with four assholes in Chicago, and then the conniption being had about the awful assholish things that they did, having been charged with hate crimes. But this is just a little piece of news out of my corner of the world. Kind of one of the reasons that I probably will knock off a little bit early and go and get Margie from Walmart, because you don't want to leave folks sitting around at Walmart. A man named Timothy Blake, aged 28, of Mineral Wells, West Virginia, which is up in Wood County, which is kind of in the corner. It's the county where Parkersburg is, and Parkersburg, of course, sits on the Ohio River across from, Ohio. And like everywhere else in West Virginia, it seems, there's a goddamn Walmart. And Timothy Blake, who apparently drove a truck with a logo on it, a very distinct logo on the truck for Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services. Timothy Blake, age 28, of Mineral Wells, West Virginia, works for Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services. Well, he's got this thing that he liked to do. And by thing, I mean disgusting. And by disgusting, what I mean is that going back as far as November and taking place on at least 12 separate occasions, 28-year-old oil field services worker Timothy Blake would fill syringes after masturbating. He'd fill syringes with his own semen and then walk around in places like Walmart, and he would use the syringes filled with semen to squirt unsuspecting women with same. Now, this isn't just simply an appeal to one's prurient interests. These are actual crimes. And it began coming to light after one woman discovered it in Wally World. When she felt something wet going down her back, and then she went in and got cleaned up in the bathroom, in the restroom. And when she walked out, she found 28-year-old Timothy Blake of Mineral Wells, West Virginia, oil field services worker for Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services, standing outside the restroom and sort of leering at her. Mm-hmm. And she took off and she followed him until he got into his truck and left when she saw the distinctive insignia on the side of the truck for Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services, where he works. Another woman had something similar done to her. She gave a similar description. So eventually, according to Sheriff Larry Minks over at the Washington County Sheriff's Office in Marietta, Ohio, detectives approached 28-year-old Timothy Blake of Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services. They approached him and his wife while they were headed to dinner. Suffice to say, Mrs. Blake was not aware of what hubby was up to. Mm-hmm. And then, according to the affidavit for the arrest warrant, the defendant stated maybe squirting women with semen-filled syringes were his way of having sex with these women. So he's facing a pair of felony and a pair of misdemeanor charges. He's in Washington County, Ohio jail without bond, pending arraignment. You know, ew. Just ew. Yeah, I thought the same thing at Mike in Cascadia. Mr. Blake, have delusions as Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper. And precious bodily fluids, Mandrake. Exactly. Brother Deacon Asa says, did little Timothy Blake also grab said women by the... And then Asa says, sigh, it's going to be a long, nasty 4 years. Hey, you want to bet who 28-year-old Yellow Jacket oil field services worker Timothy Blake voted for, huh? Yeah, I know. But I think there's also, oh, I don't know. We know that, for instance, from at least one famous psychological study that had to be stopped before it got completely out of hand. We know that prison guards become numb to the brutalizing of other people. We know from hidden cameras in chicken processing plants that the people who do that nasty work become immune to the nastiness in which they are involved. Can one say the same thing? About working in the what is euphemistically referred to as the oil patch. I think back many years ago to the brute who showed up at a picnic on Cayford Mountain and made gestures and lots of the words threatening to slit the throat of a little boy who was there with his daddy at a picnic hosted by, a dear friend and leader of the movement who has since gone on, our buddy Larry. The guy with big old guy, skinhead, tattoos, and rubbed hot dogs all over his jiggling naked chest and belly, screaming about tree huggers. I mean, on the one hand, we could say, it probably has nothing to do with what the guy did for a living. You know, or maybe not. Hard to say. But it's disturbing, to say the least. At the very least, somebody in the PR division of Yellow Jacket Oil Field Services is probably having a bad day. And oil field services, of course, are not limited to oil stuff. It also takes in fracking services as well. And my only argument with regard to that is that if one is engaged in a business where one brutalizes the place one lives, doesn't it make it a little easier to maybe brutalize other people as well? I mean, that's certainly been our experience in the mountaintop removal struggle. Larry Gibson knew it up on top of Cayford Mountain, vandalized and threatened for his all too short life. Judy Bonds, who's the sixth anniversary of who's having left us, was a couple of days ago, was at a sit-in when a supporter of mountaintop removal, a woman by the name of Ruth Taylor, came across the line and cold-cocked her in the side of the head, even as a cancer was eating at Judy's brain. So, I don't know. I suppose maybe a definitive answer is out of the question, but the question itself remains. And consider the inherent dangers of being... I guess we could be happy that that he wasn't filling syringes with like sulfuric acid or hydrochloric acid or anything like that. But still, you know, semen. One could possibly contract, you know, Clamaherpagona syphilades in that kind of bodily fluid transfer. So just, kind of an explanation for why I feel compelled to leave a little bit early to go and pick up Margie from Hellmart. Right? Yeah. So, okay, back to real news, shall we? We've had a conversation over the past several nights, off and on, as to putting some sense of order to the degree of resistance we offer up to, say, the nominations made by the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini for his cabinet. And I've been thinking about that some because it sort of assumes that resistant energy is a finite quantity. And I don't know if that's true or not. But in many ways the decisions are being made for us because confirmation hearings of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III are rapidly approaching. There will only be, and thanks very kindly to Scott and Punky in San Diego for the article from The Nation, there will only be 2 days of confirmation hearings for said unreconstructed Confederate. Opponents of the nomination of Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III will only be allowed to call 4 witnesses against him. Oh, yeah, we're not going to have a whole parade of people marching through the Senate Judiciary Committee to lay out just how nasty, obnoxious, noxious, and... no. Mm-mm. 2 days, only 4 witnesses. Now, back in the bad old days of the Dim Leader administration, the Reign of Error, there were 4 days of hearings for Attorney General nominee John Calico Cat Crisco Oil Ashcroft. Interestingly, I found out earlier today that Sessions is one of very few presidential nominees ever to be opposed by common cause. That sort of says something. Common cause recognizes that a president is entitled upon election to choose the people that he wants to have in his administration. Yet today, Common Cause announced its opposition to the nomination of Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III as Attorney General. Common Cause deems him unfit to serve as the nation's top law enforcement officer. In a press release, they note Senator Sessions has for decades been an outspoken critic of the Voting Rights Act, one of this country's most critical pieces of civil and voting rights legislation. Common Cause President Karen Hobart Flynn said the Voting Rights Act is on the chopping block with the nomination of Senator Sessions, and recent victories in the courts striking down laws designed to suppress minority voting would be threatened under a Sessions-led Justice Department. Common Cause has opposed presidential nominees only a handful of times in our 46-year history, but Senator Sessions is a longtime critic of too many of the laws he would be charged with enforcing as Attorney General. Previously, Common Cause opposed the nomination of Robert Bork, John Tower, and Ed Meese. In two of those instances, Bork and Tower were rejected by the U.S. Senate. Meese, however, was confirmed and served as Attorney General, but once he got embroiled in a defense contracting scandal in the Reagan administration, the scandal-plagued Reagan administration, he'd quit. And by the way, for your viewing pleasure, set your TiVos, your DVRs, whatever, for January the 10th and the 11th. And that's it. 2 days. Nothing more. Common Cause points out that this is the same Senate Judiciary Committee that has, for more than a year, refused to even hold hearings on President Obama's nominee to fill a vacancy on the United States Supreme Court. Common Cause President Karen Hobart Flynn said, "The Senate Judiciary Committee has no business ramming through the nomination on an expedited schedule before President-elect Trump is even sworn into office. The fact that a previous Republican-controlled U.S. Senate rejected Senate Sessions' nomination for a federal judgeship because of a series of racially insensitive or racist language should give the Senate pause. It would be irresponsible of the Senate to rush to confirm a suspect nominee simply because he's a fellow member of what has been referred to as the world's most exclusive club. Sessions' questionable record should be carefully reviewed before the Senate rubber stamps the same man it found unfit to be a federal judge years ago." Mm-hmm. Among other things, there's a questionnaire that goes out to presidential nominees for cabinet posts. In this particular instance, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood didn't even offer the Senate Judiciary Committee the courtesy of filling out the questionnaire they sent him. As Common Cause points out, the senator omitted inclusion of dozens of recent interviews, including some given to Breitbart and others as recent as October of 2016, in which he excuses President-elect Trump's statements condoning sexual assault. Content aside, Such omissions amount to a process violation. In 2010, when the senator himself reviewed submissions from a judicial nominee, he noted that the incomplete response was potentially disqualifying and a criminal offense. Karen Hobart Flynn noted, Senator Sessions cannot contend for the nation's chief lawyer without playing by the rules. And in addition, of course, he's a liar. Because, as pointed out on this program, Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III actively misrepresented his role in a number of prosecutions in civil rights cases. As three former DOJ attorneys noted in a recent op-ed, Senator Sessions completed no substantive work on at least three of the four cases that he claimed in his recent questionnaire his most significant civil rights cases. Tellingly, Senator Sessions failed to include these same cases in his questionnaire for his 1986 nomination to a federal judgeship. It's clear, said Common Cause President Flynn, that the senator is trying to develop a record that doesn't exist. He did it when prosecuting three activists for voter fraud, despite the dearth of evidence, and he's doing it now to try to fool his colleagues. America's elected representatives must call it out for what it is, an unsuccessful attempt to gain an unearned office. But here's part of the reality. As much as it galls me to say so, he will probably be confirmed. I pretty much predict that whatever the makeup is on the Senate Judiciary Committee, there will be one more Republican than there is among Democrats or independents. And that is the way the committee will vote. You could hold the vote right now or a year from now. The numbers will not change because it does not matter to the Republican Party how vile, how vicious, how dishonest the nominee is. As long as he's got that precious R after his name and can go into the Department of Justice and start swinging a wrecking ball around, especially in relation to civil rights and voting rights cases. Remember, once upon a time, a member of his office in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Alabama, a black man, was assigned to handle civil rights cases. And upon rejecting one case, Sessions declared, "I just wish I could decline them all." Mm-hmm. But the 10th and 11th of January is when this bit of political theater will take place. But in the larger scheme of things, I don't necessarily think that it is some sort of zero-sum game. I think we can resist each and every nominee. To your way of thinking, is there a good Trump nominee? Is there anybody that you look at and go, well, okay, you know, I can kind of live with it? I can make that argument maybe in one instance. And that's it. And that's as close as I can get. And that's the Secretary of Defense nomination of Mad Dog Maddox, former Marine General. I mean, the guy at least comes from, but even he, I believe, has a problem because he hasn't been away from the Marine Corps long enough to officially qualify to be Secretary of Defense. We have learned that, among other things, yeah, you remember Pam Bondi? Now, she's not waiting in the wings in case the Senate Judiciary Committee gets a sudden case of the ethics. But she will, at least according to The Hill, in a story published today, by Brooke Seipel. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi is expected to join the Trump White House, according to a new report. Bloomberg reports that the Benito Cheetos handlers, or aides rather, are at present working to finalize her role in the Trump administration. You remember Pam Bondi, right? Her office there, the Florida Attorney General's office, was investigating Donald Trump and Trump University until the mail ran one day and this $25,000 check fell out of it. Written by Trump's foundation, you know, the charitable foundation that did things like spend $20,000 on a 6-foot-tall photo of Herr Trump. Yeah. Yeah, a check fell out, $25,000 for Pam Bondi's reelection efforts. And then, curiously, the Florida Attorney General's office lost interest in pursuing any sort of an investigation of Trump University. Now, both Benito Cheeto and Pam Bondi vociferously declared that, well, there was no connection between that $25,000 check and Attorney General Bondi deciding not to investigate her boss, Trump, anymore. No. On the other hand, the Internal Revenue Service did declare the $25,000 an illegal political donation, at which point people in the Trump cabal said, well, that was certainly an honest mistake. Yeah, maybe it was a mistake. It seems terribly I think they wrote the check intentionally. But it was an honest mistake, and they paid $2,500 in a fine for having violated the campaign finance laws of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. So she'll be joining the misadministration. She'll be joining the coup. Marty points out Bondi is also the Florida AG whose office so thoroughly screwed up the prosecution of George Zimmerman They got Trayvon Martin charged, convicted, and executed for being the victim of getting shot. That's a pretty accurate description. Yeah. Days. That's what we've got between here and January the 20th. 15 days. Although, and she's grandfathered out of the program, but this is worth mentioning. Apparently, Ann Coulter is not a real good practitioner of the art of number knowing. Now, I don't profess to be a practitioner of the art of number knowing. My ciphering skills are famously poor. But presumably, anticipating, and this is a real big presumably anticipating the ascension of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini to the most powerful political office on earth. Yesterday, Anthrax Coulter tweeted 2 digits. And we're doing some pretty big presuming here. Yes, well, in Chicago, I think one could say that Ann Coulter did start publicly drying her white sheets and brown shirts. Because yesterday, she tweeted 2 digits, the numeral 1 and the numeral 4 together, 14. The assumption being that she was actually anticipating tomorrow, which will be 14 days till the inauguration, right? But that's not the way the Trumpanzees took it. They immediately began responding. How did they respond? Well, they replied tweetily with equally succinct remarks. Yes. Sending out tweets that simply said 88. Mm-hmm. And we do know what the 88 means, right? That's something that the economically anxious supporter, because neo-Nazism is just economic anxiety. That's all it is. Because after all, Donald Trump was only elected by a minority of this country, only elected president because of economic anxiety among the white people, special snowflake types. If it hadn't been for all that economic anxiety they felt, maybe we wouldn't be waiting for the wheels to come off or the mushroom clouds to sprout. So Ann Coulter tweets the number 14, and the economically anxious neo-Nazis came swarming out from behind the baseboards like the roaches they are and tweeted, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." Because that's what 14 stands for in white supremacist neo-Nazi code. It's a quote from David Lane, the so-called godfather of the American neo-Nazi movement. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Others, as noted, responded, 88, because the number 8 corresponds in the alphabet to the letter H, and 88 among white supremacists stands for Heil Hitler. Some jackass, racist Sherlock said, "Does she mean what I hope she means by this?" Yeah. Lot of 88s. Because, see, the neo-Nazis are really, really excited about this. Gerald pointing out, well, Ann Coulter isn't really known for her word knowing either, so there's that. Yeah. Meanwhile, this being Thursday and all, how about a little something-something from South Carolina, Stan? They're having the penalty phase trial of Dylann Roof at present in Charleston, South Carolina. And Dylann Roof, having been found competent to serve as his own counsel so that he can have a fool for a lawyer, is objecting to the fact that the government, we the people of the United States, trying to form a more perfect union, the government, via our lawyers, is putting on a whole bunch of witnesses in that penalty phase. And Dylann Roof doesn't like it. Now, granted, there are only going to be 2 days of hearings for a racist nominee to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. You know, the next time some white guy goes in and shoots up a black church once Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is attorney general, we won't have to worry about days of testimony against the perpetrator. We may not even have to worry about a trial of the perpetrator. But Dylann Roof has been convicted of the murders at Mother Emanuel Church. That happened last month. And today he objected to the government's stated plan to call 38 survivors and friends to testify about what those murders did to them. Now, meanwhile, Dylann Roof is not calling any witnesses of his own, and he's not offering any testimony, and he hasn't offered any cross-examination. No. But he doesn't like the 38 survivors and friends being called to testify because that's the same number of witnesses who were called to testify against Timothy McVeigh, the right-wing Christian murderer who bombed the Murrah Federal Building back in 1995. And killed 168 people. In a motion, Roof said, "If I don't present any mitigation evidence,
the victim impact evidence will take over the whole sentence in trial and guarantee that I get the death penalty.
There have been 2 days of testimony now from people who have been forever scarred by the actions of Dylann Roof. Family and friends, 9 of them, offered testimony remembering the lives of Myra Thompson, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, DePayne Middleton Doctor, and Reverend Daniel Simmons, who were all killed by Dylann Roof because he was radicalized and weaponized by the same sort of folks who tweet back 88 to a tweet of 14. You know, watch this space, as the saying goes. Also in South Carolina, because they got themselves a whole Bible-believing, God-fearing family values down there, a member of the South Carolina State House done got himself arrested back late in December of 2016. The Aiken County Sheriff's Office was called to the home of State Representative Chris Corley, Republican, whom they interrupted in the process of beating the living hell out of his wife. Oh, I know. Carol Baker with a question regarding Dylann Roof. You mean that boy hasn't been named as the Secretary of Race Relations or some such in the Trump administration? I fully expect him to get a complete presidential pardon and be offered a job at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, Carol. No, as the old year waned and moved toward its merciful end, or perhaps merciless end would be a better term, the Aiken County Sheriff's Office had to show up at the home of Representative Chris Corley, where Mrs. Corley told the deputies that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Chris had beaten her with a closed fist. You know, where I come from, we call that punching someone. He had punched her repeatedly with his fist until he finally noticed that there was blood coming from her head. Or as the guy who will become president of the United States on January 20th might put it, her wherever. At that point, he also noticed, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republican. He also noticed that his children were screaming. So that gave Republican Representative Chris Corley pause to reflect. And, you know, when you're a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican member of the state legislature in South Carolina, when you've been punching your wife repeatedly in the head because she's accused you of because she's caught you cheating on her, when you get a chance to reflect what you and your children are screaming and everything, What you do is you take a step back and you take a deep breath. And you sort of give yourself a moment. And then you go out to the car and you get your gun and you bring it back in the house and you cock it and point it at your wife's head. At least that's what you do if you're good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual, Republican member of the state legislature of South Carolina, Chris Corley. And when questioned by the deputies, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Republican member of the state legislature, Chris Corley, told the deputies, he said, "Now, we just got into a verbal disagreement when my wife accused me of going out and romping around on her. And I was forced, I tell you. Boys, I'm a tell. I mean, you know, we all just men here. We understand each other now, don't we? I was forced to push her away because she tried to hit me with her closed fist, and when I was pushing her away, my closed fist pushed her away repeatedly in the head." At last report, and I'm sure he's since bonded out, he was held in the Aiken County Detention Center pending a bond hearing, which has since taken place, arrested on charges of first-degree domestic violence and pointing and presenting firearms. That's a crime down there in South Carolina. Presenting firearms. Present! Huh? Right? But as Don from Central PA points out in the chat room, I'm sure Baby Jeebus has forgiven Chris Corley. I'm sure, too. God is love, y'all! Mm-hmm. I hate it when that happens. You're standing there, your wife is accusing you because she done caught you in flagrante delicto, which is Latin for bed. And you just got to push her away with your fist, all balled up and whomped into the, yeah. It's not a joke. It's real. And somewhere over on the seamier side of the internet, I'm sure there's a vigorous discussion taking place in some men's rights forum about how, well, she tried to hit him with her closed fist, and they didn't take her away and charge her with no first-degree felony. Well, don't worry. Here in just a few more days, we won't have to worry about that sort of thing anymore. Because we'll have a president who thinks it's okay to grab women by their genitals, and it's just really not that far of a leap from grabbing a woman by her genitals to punching her in the head. Because freedom. Because after all, if they hadn't voted for Trump, they'd still be living with all that economic anxiety. Man, I hate it when your economic anxiety gets so bad you got to punch a woman in the head, don't you? Mm-hmm. In Australia, or from Australia, Robert writes, 88-14? I'm beginning to worry about what happens on January 20th, Bob. What happens when the Trumpanzees meet up with protesters on the Mall? Will this be the first presidential swearing-in that comes with a massive riot? Well, no, because by then, you know, the Capitol Police are they're under the control of the sergeant at arms, and the sergeant at arms is under the control of the majority in the Congress. And the Secret Service lives to protect the President of the United States. So, no, I don't think there'll be a massive riot. I think those law enforcement agencies will probably step in and beat the living bejesus out of any potential protesters, because freedom, America. Although I did see a story coming out of Australia, I can't remember the woman's name. The American disease continues to metastasize up over down under. A news presenter or story presenter, talking head, who happens to be female, who has been subjected of late by at least one scandal sheet in Australia. She's been accused of, let's see, dating a gay colleague, a straight colleague, as she put in a tweet, or a Facebook post or whatever, dating a guy that she just happened to be standing next to. Well, she was caught by a paparazzi and photographed from behind. And the photograph displayed the fact that, well, she had what is commonly referred to, at least here in the new United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever, under God, amen. As a VPL, a visible panty line. And the publication, I will not say news outlet, published same and made some crack about her granny panties. I guess now anything that doesn't that isn't a thong is granny panties. But I read that story and I thought, hey, that sounds like something we'd do here. It was sort of refreshing, though, because Australian readers immediately erupted in outrage, telling the whichever publication it was to promptly go and feck themselves. So maybe there's a little hope yet, Robert. Subject line, scared to die, Clarence writes and says, Bob, I do not understand the mindset of folks who have no problem killing. Most of them despise the idea of being killed. Roof is a coward. Well, he is. And I want to be clear in this. I'll get some pushback. I don't know. I do not wish to see Dylann Roof subjected to the death penalty. I do not wish to see him horizontally crucified. There was a story earlier in the week about how Charles Manson, in prison low these 48 years, was recently transferred to an outside hospital for some sort of significant ailment. Charlie Manson was, wait a minute, I'm sorry. Charleston, West Virginia's own Charlie Manson was originally sentenced to die for having masterminded the Tate-LaBianca murders. But when California outlawed the death penalty, that sentence was changed to life. He's even had the possibility of parole. And he's been up for several parole hearings, each of which has been he's been denied because, among other things, he is apparently still dangerously, criminally insane. And so there's every likelihood, you know, unless, because it's 2017 now and we're about to have Donald Trump for president, unless maybe Donald decides to commute his sentence and or maybe even pardon him. Because, I mean, there was never any proof that Charlie Manson actually did any of the murders. He just sort of orchestrated them. The murdering part was actually done by his little followers. Now, I'm not a fan of the death penalty. Hell, I'm not a fan of death. Remember me? I'm the guy who wants humanity to have a longer lifespan, not a shorter one. So, no, I'm not a fan of the death penalty. I would like for Dylann Roof to live for a very, very, very long time in a maximum security prison with lots of other maximum security prisoners around him, so that he may have ample opportunity to reflect upon the crimes that he committed and perhaps at some point in time come to the realization that it was wrong to have done that. That it was heinous and evil to have done that. And I think I'm in pretty good company. I sincerely doubt, for instance, that Dr. Martin Luther King, were he alive, would have advocated for the death penalty for Dylann Roof. Yeah? And I'm in good company, apparently. Carol Baker says, thank you for saying you don't want to see Roofy executed, regardless of what he did. The death penalty obviously does not deter crime. It costs more than keeping people in prison for life. It's the easy way out. Most importantly, it's morally wrong. Thank you for being better than that. Besides, I'm betting the brothers in prison are going to give him some sensitivity training. Sensitivity training of which he is decidedly, badly in need. I mean, think about what that sentence would be. Life. For a kid who's, what, 20 years old? 50, 60 years in prison? What would you choose? I mean, let's assume for a moment that you did something that was worthy of either death penalty or life without parole. What would you choose? Would you rather be there for a few years and then get bumped off in the name of the state? Or would you like to be in the stir and hear those doors clanging shut and know that you are looking at 50, 60, 70 years right where you were? Me? I don't know. But if you take 9 people dead and you divide that into, say, 54 years, That's only 6 years per person murdered. That ain't much. But it's a lot better than 3 or 4 months. And then bump him off. Unfortunately, that's what the government is probably going to be seeking on behalf of you and me. Yeah. I don't want him killed. I want him to have ample time for reflection. Thank you, Charlene, for getting us started on fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. We have $185 to go now. And hopefully that'll happen in the next little bit. We've got Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report this evening. So we'll take a little break. If you'd like to engage in some conversation, I'm certainly open to it, because that's what we specialize in here, conversation radio. Jump right in. The conversation is, in fact, fine. I just kind of gave away the bumper. Oh, well. This is The Horn, Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thursday, January 5, 2017.
While we were out,
the president's declaration is drawing both condemnation and praise.
President Obama created two new national monuments. Wisconsin solves climate change by deleting it. Ohio's governor reinstates renewable energy standards. Michigan bans plastic bag bans. Plus,
two people were arrested at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minnesota today after hanging a giant banner from a beam.
Activists get high to protest Dakota Access Pipeline.
Of course they do. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Climate scientists now say 2016 will be the hottest year in Earth's recorded history, which means 16 of the 17 hottest years on record have come since 2000. Of course, the other hottest year on record came in 1863 when Mary Todd Lincoln took a boob out at the Gettysburg Address.
That actually makes no sense, but good God, do I need something to laugh about. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we were off from the Green News Report for a week or so over the holidays, but thankfully, Nothing happened in the environmental news, correct?
Oh, maybe not to you, but yes, there was plenty.
Uh-oh.
While we were out in the final weeks of 2016, President Obama designated two national monuments, protecting from development nearly 2 million acres of wilderness held in trust for the public. Obama established the Bears Ears National Monument in Utah, a victory for Native American tribes who have sought for decades to protect their sacred archaeological sites. And Obama designated Gold Butte National Monument in Nevada, a popular outdoor recreation and tourism area, which also happens to be the backyard of the scofflaw extremist Bundy family, who are under indictment for illegally using public lands for their own personal profit.
Now, of course, Donald Trump will come into office. He'll just reverse all of this, correct?
Well, Trump and the Republicans have vowed to reverse most, if not all, of Obama's environmental and climate actions, and they can do that with varying degrees of difficulty. But no incoming president has ever reversed a national monument created by a previous president. Republicans say they'll target the Antiquities Act, which gives all presidents authority to protect public lands.
But to do that, they would actually have to change the law versus just overturn an executive action the way Obama has done this, correct?
For that, specifically, yes. And House Republicans, by the way, this week passed new budget rules to make it much easier to transfer public federal lands to the states for sale or development.
So they're already getting ready to give away our public lands.
Yep. Meanwhile, in the states, in Vermont, good news, hackers did not penetrate the U.S. electric grid. In a story that spread widely before the facts got its pants on, malware of unknown origin was found on a Burlington Electric Company laptop computer that was not connected to the electric grid. Now, the threat of cyber attack on the nation's aging and decrepit electric grid is a major issue requiring attention. But this wasn't it.
Part of the panic to declare that Russia has hacked this or that or the other thing before anybody bothers to actually look at the facts.
That's right. Wisconsin has solved climate change by deleting it. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports that the Wisconsin State Department of Natural Resources quietly deleted climate change from its website, purging key scientific facts on the impacts of climate change on Wisconsin's natural resources. The taxpayer-funded site now denies the global scientific consensus on man-made climate change.
If it's not on a web page, it's just not happening. Everyone knows that.
In Michigan, the Republican-majority state legislature has banned local plastic bag bans. That's right. The state government has blocked local governments from banning single-use plastic bags in an attempt to reduce pollution that clogs municipal water systems and costs cities millions to clean up.
So the idea that Republicans like small government, local government, maybe not so much?
It's the tyranny of local control.
Hypocrisy of Republican control.
In Minnesota, three Dakota Access Pipeline protesters were arrested after they climbed into the rafters high above Sunday's game at Viking Stadium in Minneapolis. They unfurled a huge banner calling out U.S. Bank, whose name is on that stadium, to divest from its investment in the Dakota Access Pipeline.
And has U.S. Bank replied?
Nope, they're still invested. In Ohio, in a victory for the clean energy industry, Republican Governor John Kasich has reinstated a renewable energy requirement for utilities that has been on hold for more than 2 years. He vetoed the Ohio Republican majority state legislature's bill to extend a freeze on those standards.
So that's a good thing.
That is.
A Republican governor who did a good thing.
That's right.
Well done, John Kasich. Your political career is over.
And finally, some good news.
Finally.
In Nevada, the city of Las Vegas has announced that it is now powered entirely by renewable energy. To be clear, they mean all of the city's municipal buildings and facilities are now run by 100% renewable energy.
In this year, 2017, I will take whatever we can get.
Indeed.
Thank you. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to and didn't get to over the holidays, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Back from the Holidays Green News Report.
Viva Las Vegas.
God, I hear that song and my that little muscle there just immediately begins to twitch and make that Elvis snarl. Can't help it. Don't know why. It just happens. Let's run over to Pennsylvania right quick and see what's going on line one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Bob. My name's John. I live in Pennsylvania, Stan.
Hey, how you doing, John?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing?
Among the living.
Yeah, me too. I'm a fairly new listener. I just started listening to your show right before Thanksgiving. I discovered your show from Tara Devlin's show. Thomas Reynolds mentioned you, and I think they mentioned the term Trump Tanzee, which I thought was hilarious. So, you know, they said that they liked that word. So I was like. So I typed in your name, Bob Kincaid, on Google, and your show came up, and I'm hooked. I love it. I laugh.
Well, I mean, addiction is dangerous, but if you're going to have one, this is about as benign a one as you can have, John.
Exactly. And yeah, I love it because I love your show because like I'm very worried right now. I'm going through a lot of stress because of this everything that's going on in the country. I'm just and people like you and Malloy, you just have this way of talking about the issues with what's the word I'm looking for? Like enthusiasm, you know, and you use the curse words, which I love, and it just, the way you say things just really makes me feel better. It doesn't stress me out. Like the Tom Hartman show, for example, I like Tom Hartman, but like he kind of stresses me out the way he talks about the issues, and you just put like a funny spin on it. Same with Malloy. And I really love that.
Well, John, Hartman's just so darn smart. After a while, I think I just get a little bit intimidated, but all I can do is look at this stuff, and I mean, it is what it is, and it's real, and it's grim as hell. But if we don't maintain some degree of equanimity about ourselves, we're going to drown in our own salty tears. And I don't swim that good.
Right. That's how I am right now. I'm so stressed out. I mean, people in my family think I'm crazy, but the thing is, everybody in my family and everybody I know thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. And me, myself, like you and Malloy, I said, no, she's not going to win. And everybody, oh, no, she will. So now the same people that are saying that she was going to win are now saying, oh, it's not that bad. It's just another Republican. And I just don't think it is. I think that this is really – I think that we are stepping into some kind of an American fascist dictatorship. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I really did everything screams it. This person is not normal. These people, the way they're behaving, it's not normal. Like Mitch McConnell saying the American people aren't going to tolerate obstruction for the – Trump Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah, right. See, I saw that clip too, John, and once again, it was one of those moments where you go, nope, there's no God, because in that instant, the lightning, if he was really up there, the lightning bolt just, and then there's a little greasy, smoky spot where Mitch McConnell used to be, just for the sheer hypocrisy of it. I mean, the Greek gods wouldn't have put up with something like that. The Greek gods would have sent somebody wandering along. Hey, by the way, Mitch, you're your own granddaddy. Go off stage and gouge your eyes out now.
Right. Exactly. And, it's when I heard that, I swear I about went into a rage. It had me so angry, and I think that these people, since Trump was elected, they think that everybody's that stupid. They think, well, the American people, they're dumb enough to elect Trump. Well, then they're dumb enough to let us get away with everything that we want to get away with.
And there's there's the corollary to that, John, of, well, y'all elected him. Good luck. Whatever happens to you, you deserve. And that would be great if it just happened to them.
Yeah.
But it's going to be happening to us, too.
Right. And I wanted to say to everyone in Trump supporters, you want to support him, you want to support that lunatic, that miserable piece of human dreck, go ahead and support him. But the thing is, you're bringing us all down with you if he gets elected, and he did, and it just – I live in rural Pennsylvania. You know how this is.
Because you live in the part of Pennsylvania that's neither Pittsburgh nor Philadelphia, that's Alabama in the middle?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what my dad says. He says, between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh is Alabama, and that's exactly where I live. I live in it's a place called a little town called Redmine. I mean, it is smack dab in between. It is royal as all hell. It's a lot of, you know, rednecks, which are fine. I like rednecks, but it's just
people.
I mean, right, which is great. It's great to know that there's liberal rednecks and more liberals out there. You know, I right now I'm like the only liberal that I know. You know, really. I mean, even my own brother is. I mean, he's not a Trump supporter. So he says, but he's kind of conservative. Like he does, he likes small government. He's like a libertarian type.
Well, okay, hold on, John, because I've got an opportunity here to gather some empirical data, and I got to. Have you ever, when your brother says he wants small government, have you ever asked him what that means?
I have not. The reason why I never got around to asking him that is because I always get into these fits, these arguments about it. And I always go on these tangents and say, well, what about this? What you want people that have health care and all this kind of stuff? He thinks that that corporations shouldn't be taxed and all that kind of stuff. And I'll have to ask him that question.
Well, next time that comes up, I mean, just take one for the team if you wouldn't care. And just kind of take a deep breath. Not so that he'll think that you're giving some sort of, sigh of disgust or anything, but just say, can we sort this out real quick? What does that mean? You want a small government?
I never understood that. He's like a free market type. And now understand, he does realize that Trump is a fascist. So he agrees with, I don't really consider Trump himself a fascist. I mean, he is, but I mean, I consider the whole picture. I look at the bigger picture, and I see fascism all around him. Him and everybody around him is. Not to get all, and I digress, but anyway, my brother, he thinks that he is a fascist, just like I do, but he's a free market type. He says, oh, the free market will take care of everything. Because I said, actually on Christmas Day, I said, we need universal health care. It's the smartest, the most logical thing to do right now is to have universal health care. Oh no, we can't do that. The market, you're messing with the free market and all this kind of stuff. I said, look at how much we spend on military spending. That is completely excessive.
But John, since when does the free market have any business making a profit off of the agony, illness, misery, and death of human beings? I mean, granted, sometimes that's the natural outgrowth of the operation of the free market. But in the case of healthcare, that's the free market actually generating profits out of people being sick and miserable.
And dying.
Yeah. What business does the free market have in clean water?
Right. That stuff, too, like regulations. They don't like regulations. And I think, my senator... I'm glad you brought up clean water because my senator is Senator Pat Toomey, and I wrote a letter to him about I was mad about them obstructing Obama for 8 years and obstructing his Supreme Court nominee. He wrote me a letter back responding. He actually wrote back, and he said, well, I don't agree with Merrick Garland on issues and all this kind of stuff. And then he said stuff about job-killing regulations and things. I wrote him back, and I said, I didn't ask you if you agree with Merrick Garland or not. I asked you why you didn't even bring it up for a vote, And I said, and I asked him, what does job-killing regulations mean? What does that mean when they say, I actually asked that in the letter, and I gave him the stuff like Clean Water Act, that those kind of job-killing regulations, I just don't, that when I hear job-killing regulations, I can't help but think, that means let's make corporations do whatever they want, make money for them and us, not us. I mean the politicians, and at the expense of the consumer.
Well, just by way of trying to be a little bit of a helper here, when you reach out, because obviously you're involved enough that you do take time to contact your representatives. When you do that, just based on some stuff I've been reading, make sure that your outreach goes to your local office. Don't bother with the DC office. You're much more likely to get something resembling a cogent response by reaching out to your local office of your representative, whether it be Pat Toomey or your member of the House, what have you. So whatever local office is nearest you, reach out to that. And you know, secondarily, John, you know, when they talk about job killing regulations, it's real easy to reply, oh, okay, so you're more worried about job killing regulations than people killing corporations.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one. See, you just said that Tom Hartman is smart, but you didn't mention how smart you are, though. You know, you. I just wanted to tell you that earlier when you said about that he overwhelmed you and you intimidates you. You're a very smart man, because who comes up with stuff like that? You know, that's a great one-liner.
Well, it's just born of experience here, John, because we've been up to our neck in people complaining about job killing regulations, and we just happen to have real experience with the fact that when those regulations aren't enforced, people die.
And that's a real thing, right? Because, I mean, you live in West Virginia, and like, you've been around the coal industry. I didn't know until I started listening to your show that West Virginia, and I excuse my not being naive, but that I didn't know that coal was such a big industry in West Virginia. I don't know why.
It's out of sight, out of mind, for one. We don't like to think about it. Two, the coal industry has worked very, very hard to make sure that no one thinks about them until they want them to.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, the way they go about it, the mountaintop removal, I mean, you know, there's an area of land in Appalachia the size of the entire state of Delaware that just isn't there anymore. It's gone.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Over 2,000 miles of streams buried forever.
Wow. I did not know that. And that's a really unfortunate, because, I mean, those mountains are historical, obviously, you know, and I mean, it's, I remember, when I watched Gettysburg at the very beginning, they said, you know, the movie Gettysburg at the very beginning, they said the Confederates marched past them mountains. They hid them as they marched past them. So they have historic, you know, they're very historical, and that's in nature. You don't want to mess with that. I mean, that's
well, I live near a road called the Midland Trail, which started out as a buffalo and deer trail and then turned into a sort of mini highway used by indigenous people before white folks got here. And by the time the Civil War rolled around, it was used by one of the first things that Robert E. Lee tried to do was to figure out a way to get at the North early on with an invasion force coming through here. But the terrain was just too hard and miserable. He also had a pair of Confederate generals under him, named Wise and I can't remember the other one. They were both former governors of Virginia, and they hated each other's guts, and they would rather have fought each other than fought the Yankees. But that all,
oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, no, it's kind of a hilarious thing that they did. They hated each other's freaking guts. And that's, you know, 8-10 miles up the road from me. And Lee came through here and went, yeah, it's a great idea, I reckon, but I don't think we're going to be able to do it. Because the land was, the geography and the topography was just impossible.
Oh, is it that much, rough terrain?
Oh, yeah.
Where you're at?
We're not talking about the Rocky Mountains or anything, but if you're marching an army around, and everything's either on foot or on horseback, no, you're not going anywhere.
Right. And I didn't know that. So wasn't that part of the Western theater? It's been a while since I've been in high school. I'm 27. So it's, you know, it's been, not been too long, but it's been a while. I wasn't sure. Did the West Virginia, was that part of the Western theater too? Because, well, my last name is Forrest, right? My name's John Forrest.
Yeah.
And do you know a general named Nathan Bedford Forrest?
Oh, of course.
From Tennessee.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my great, 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 maybe there's another great, great, great uncle.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we got the same surname and all that. And I even have some of his features. You can tell on my face and stuff. You know, I, obviously I'm a lot more liberal than he was, but I wasn't sure if West Virginia was the western part of the Western theater, or was that part of the was that part of the with
no, it's more of the Eastern theater, because up until June 20th, 1863, this was all still Virginia, remember?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you guys seceded from the Confederacy, or how'd that work?
We were. It's a complicated story, and one that's actually well worth learning, because it's so damn fascinating. When Virginia seceded, most of the counties west of the Allegheny front didn't want to go. And so there was a move to create sort of a government in exile in Wheeling. And eventually, Lincoln, although it was constitutionally dodgy, Lincoln acceded to the idea of just carving out an entirely separate state. And that,
oh, really?
And so we became a state on June the 20th, 1863.
Oh, so right in the middle of the Civil War.
Yes, absolutely. And we entered the country as a member of the Union.
Oh, okay.
And some of that was psyops, you know, just to piss off the old blue bloods over there in the Old Dominion.
Wow, I didn't know about that you guys that were part of Virginia until one time I visited West Virginia to visit a friend that was working down there, and I remember somebody telling me that I said, I never knew that you guys were part of Virginia, and that's a very interesting, I'll have to look into that.
In the meantime, this state was quite divided. I have ancestors who fought on both sides, and there are still places. I can think of one in particular. There's a county that to this day, where your body is taken to the funeral home depends on which side your family supported 150 years ago. The
really?
Southern end of the county went for the Union, and the northern end of the county went for the Confederacy.
How do they determine that? How would they know which side their family was?
Because we hang on to that kind of stuff. I mean, in Appalachia, John, you talk about your great 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 grandfather the way you talk about your next door neighbor.
Oh,
I mean, they're people.
Different life.
They're people. They're people in your life. It's the closest thing that the closest analogy I can draw is the role that ancestors play in, say, Japanese culture or Native American culture. I mean, I still tell stories that were passed down to me about people I never met and who were dead 100 years before I was born.
And it's kind of like how, I guess it was last night, that you said your grandfather would be 120 or so. And is that kind of how, it's kind of what you mean by?
Yeah, I never met the man, but I think about him all the time because I know stuff about him. He was made real for me.
That's very interesting. I mean, do you hear in Pennsylvania? I mean, if you try to talk about your grandfather, you know, or if I try to talk about my, you know, grandfather, hey, my grandfather did this or that, people would just look at me like, okay. You know, everything is, you know, I live in a very rural part of the state, but it's still fast-paced Yankee, northern, you know, different, I guess, kind of a different culture in a sense.
Well, yeah, and the fact that here, you know, we are still very rural, but this is all very Scots-Irish. Here where I live, you know, we've got Glen this and Burn that. People came here from Scotland and tried to recreate Scotland, and that whole ancestral thing is big inside that culture too. And so it gives you a sense of place. And the other part of it is that not everybody's like me. Okay, there are a lot of people like me here, whether they're Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, whatever. They know what their ancestry is, because by virtue of still being here, they have not participated in the atomization of American family. You know, in the aftermath of the Second World War, we got the deliberate sort of breakup of the American extended family. A dear friend of mine who's been dead for several years now, Joe Bagent, B-A-G-E-A-N-T. You might want to look up a book of his called Rainbow Pie on Amazon. You can download it on Kindle. I don't think it's ever been actually physically published in the United States. But that's his story of what happened to his family in West Virginia. They were, you know, six or seven generations in pretty much the same place over in the Eastern Panhandle. And after the war, along comes so-called the post-war economy, the post-war prosperity, and everybody bugged out. And that happened all over Appalachia. People took what was called the Hillbilly Highway to places like, Cleveland and, up in Ohio, you know, Firestone Tire, and people went to Detroit. And in the case of my own father, he went south to Alabama.
And that's why you were born in Alabama, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. Wow. So you are a true Southerner, you know, and it's like a very rare breed of Southern-born liberal talk radio host.
Well, there's not a lot of people doing this from the Southern perspective, but. You know, I think it lends at least a somewhat different angle to it all. Of course, I'm as guilty as any elitist liberal of occasionally looking down my nose at my redneck brethren. But you know, damn it, you can't just sit there and go, well, that's okay. You want to drive around with 15 Confederate flags on your truck? I'm sure you're just celebrating your heritage. But you know a little bit about that. How many Confederate flags can you count where you are on any given day?
Well, to start with, I was looking right at one right when I was leaving work today. A guy I work with has one on his front bumper. Now, I don't know if a lot of people think that they correlate the Confederate flag with racism here sometimes. And the people I know that have a Confederate flag, and there is a lot of them around here. There are about as many as American flags as there are Trump yard signs up here, you know. And a lot, but the one guy I know that has the Confederate flag, he wears, you know, T-shirts with it on and has it on his front license plate of his truck. He was saying it's not hate for me, it's heritage.
Oh, that's the standard. That's the standard out.
Right.
But the heritage doesn't speak for much either.
Right, because your real heritage, no matter what, anyway, is really that, the American flag, really, you know, or wherever your family came from. So I don't really, I mean, like I told you, my great-great-great uncle was Confederate general and stuff, but, you know, I don't consider that my heritage because that's not... You know, that's not me. I don't know. The Confederate flag doesn't mean much to me, but I do see them everywhere up here. And some people do use it as a hate symbol. They really do. And it's really a historical thing for me. And I don't know. I know that it's where I live here. There is a lot of, conservative, like, there's just a lot of conservative people here. I don't know many personally. Like, I don't know many liberals. And I'm sure they're out there. I don't really – like, I play in a band, and everybody in my band, except for a couple of people in my band, were big-time Trump supporters. And they no matter what he does, they say, oh, I don't care. You know, I said to one guy, I said, are you going to hold him accountable if he does something wrong? And the guy sort of looked at me and said, no, because he's not going to do anything wrong. He's going to get shit done. And I just keep.
I sit here and I've tried to have some of those conversations, John, where you go, well, okay, what's the shit you want him to get done?
Right.
And it falls, you know, and it falls apart immediately.
Well, so, lately here, people can tell me this. They'll say, well, look at what he did with Carrier. Look what he's doing with, just the other day, a guy looked at me because he knows I don't like Trump. Came up to me and goes, oh, so Trump's not even in office yet, and he already saved more jobs than Obama did. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you might want to check the news. So I look on the news. Trump, Ford gives Trump credit for killing the plan to move a plant to Mexico.
That they weren't going to move in the first place.
Right. So why are these companies and these corporations colluding with him and not colluding, but like collaborating with him and saying, because anybody who does anything, like even when the Silicon Valley people went and met with him, to me, I wrote them off my book. Fascist collaborators. Done. You collaborate with them, you're done. That Jackie, whatever her name is, that's going to be performing there, done. As far as I'm concerned, she might as well be a goose-stepping fascist. I these people are nothing to me anymore.
Yeah, and see, I mean, I wish I could say, well, by God, I'm going to burn all my Moron Tab and Apple Choir records, but I don't have any to begin with. But you know, and I guess there's a marching band coming from Talladega, Alabama, and that's sort of sad. But it's Alabama. But
right.
but the thing is, it's all going to be smoke and mirrors. And if the guy who came in, wow, look at the news. I don't know where he gets his news, but Trump didn't do anything. That's like the business with the Sprint jobs. He didn't do anything. The business with Carrier.
Yeah.
That's a deal where the taxpayers of Talibandiana are actually going to pay Carrier to go ahead and lay people off. It's already happening.
Yeah,
there was nothing saved there.
Yeah, there wasn't. And it's all, like you said, it's all smoke and mirrors, and it's a house of cards that's going to fall, and when it falls, it's going to fall hard. And I'm just wondering why I don't get why people are, why the headlines are favored for him. I'm wondering if people are scared of him. I'm wondering, like, and it's like the other day when he tweeted something about that Jackie,
Ivancho.
What's her last name?
Ivancho.
Yeah. Her record sales are up because of her performing at my inauguration. Now, how sick is that? That this grown 70-year-old man is subjecting this young girl to his malignant narcissism. I mean, don't you find that a little bit creepy?
I find it a lot creepy. With regard to the Trump supporters, though, I'm firmly in Van Jones's camp. This is whitelash, okay? You know how, I don't know, I mean, I don't know about you, but it was really frustrating to hear the Hilarians during the election say, well, it's her turn, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I hated that. It drove me, because there was a degree of hubris manifested in that just sort of begged for a great big cosmic smackdown that happened to arrive. But to a certain extent, you know, when you talk about these people, you know, John, who say, well, I ain't going to hold him account for nothing. I mean, I know. Well, that's because it's their turn. They had to tolerate a Negro in the White House for 8 years, and by God, it's their turn now. And so they don't care what he does.
Right. And them blaming it on economic anxiety gets under my skin so much. I mean, the same guy that says something about, you know, checking the news about the Ford deal, was he knows I voted for Hillary, and he knows that, you know, I don't like Trump. And now, granted, I like the guy personally, but one day in the bathroom, he looks at me and puts his hand up, does a stiff arm salute, and says, white power. To kind of taunt me a little bit, and I'm serious.
Or was he serious? I mean, there's no way of knowing what's, you know, because, you know, Richard Spencer there, you know, alt-white, whatever he is, you know, Richard Spencer says, well, you know, it's all very tongue-in-cheek. It's all very humorous. I don't find anything humorous about giving a salute that the last time it was taken seriously, several million people ended up dead.
Right. It's a slap. It's very disrespectful to the families of the people who died as a result of that terrible regime. And for Trump to allow them to endorse him and not and basically there's actually photographs of Trump. I've seen them. This was before the election, before November 8th, where people doing stiff arm salutes in the crowd. And there's a camera that's pointed at the angle where basically Trump is gazing over the crowd and can see everybody in the crowd. And it's too, it, you look at that, you can't help but think that he had to see that, you know?
Remember his divorce. I can't remember if it was the Marla Maples or the Ivanka divorce, but one of them testified that he kept a copy of Hitler's speeches on the nightstand by the bed.
Wow, I did hear about that. I actually thought that that was just some kind of. I didn't know if that was true or not, but you know, is it in testimony court transcripts and stuff?
I think it's in a deposition, if I recall correctly. But it was either Ivanka or Marla.
Oh, okay. You know what? I think it was Ivana or whatever. I think her name was
Ivana. Ivana, not Ivanka. Ivanka's the daughter. Yeah, my bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's a ton of stuff to be worried about. On the other hand, though, over at the New York Times, there's a story about polling that was done and discussions that were had with Trump voters. The Kaiser Foundation organized 6 focus groups there in the economic anxiety area. And 3 of them were with Trump voters enrolled in the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, and 3 with Trump voters who get the expanded Medicaid. And they went on and on about rising premiums, yada, yada, yada. And then somewhere along the way, the takeaway is, well, we don't think he'll just completely do away with the with Obamacare because he's a smart businessman and he's going to fix things. And,
right.
That's because they don't have any idea what his business model is. He's not a businessman. He's not a magnate. He's not Elon Musk. He's not building things. He's the real estate equivalent of a check kiter, John.
Yeah.
He lives and dies on floated debt.
Right.
And that's why we couldn't see his tax returns, because then we'd find out that he's actually broke. One bad day and the whole thing falls apart.
And I don't think he's going to be broke for long, because he is. I swear, I really think that he's going to use the office of the presidency to enrich himself. And these Republicans, they don't care. They won't do anything about it. If you look into David K. Johnston, he was an investigative reporter that followed him back when he was in Atlantic City. And he has all kinds of things about his business model, how there at one time the bank was so – he was a too-big-to-fail type, and the bank had so much money invested in him or had lent out to him that they actually put in their own CFO and made Trump the CEO title only, because he had – royally screwed the pooch that much. He fucked it up that much. They had to put their own CFO in there and try to reorganize things and restructure, because they were afraid they were going to lose out on billions of dollars because of him. And where are these people? Why aren't people like these bankers and stuff going, putting their finger at him and saying, don't trust him. He's a grifter. He's a con artist. He's a thug. Well, you know, why don't they do that?
Because money. Because they're thinking, hey, this might work out. This might be great for us.
Wow.
And the bankers and stuff, you know, they got burned by him a while back, and they'll never get burned by him again. But if he lets them, if he opens the barn doors and just lets them run wild and get the bit in their teeth, well, they got no gripe with him. But the biggest problem, you know, we talk from time to time about how civics, the teaching of how government actually works, has largely gone by the wayside in this country. You mentioned you're 27. Yeah, I don't know if you had a civics class or not in high school.
Nope.
Okay, well, exhibit one. But the other part of it is that the American people largely don't understand how business works either. And I'm in no position to start issuing lectures on the topic, because it's not my strong suit either, because I didn't get much of an education in it. I was busy taking archaeology classes and you know, Neolithic pottery of the Near East and shit like that in college, when I by God should have been taking economics and finance and you know, a couple of accounting classes. That's always good. It's good for people to know that kind of thing, but the American people don't. And so they don't understand how, for instance, how the subprime crisis came about. And that makes it all the easier when Fox News comes on and says, well, you know, it's because Obama wanted all them black people to have all them homes that they couldn't afford.
Yeah.
They should have been living in sharecropper shacks like God wanted.
And that's they lie like that. They try to blame everything on Obama and project everything onto him. And when it was deregulation, and now we can also blame, you know, the Clinton administration a bit for it, but it happened under Bush's watch. It was under the Bush administration that the subprime mortgage crisis happened. And what's really just mystifies me, I racked my brain to try to figure this out. I seen that they were people were interviewing Trump voters that voted for Obama twice, and they said, well, we voted for Obama twice, but he disappointed us, so now we're voting for Trump. Wait a minute. When Obama took office, gas prices where I was almost $5 a gallon, first of all. We were in the middle of a huge recession, of one that they were calling it the worst recession since Great Depression.
Yeah, but Johnny was black.
You know, exactly. It's exactly it. And
that's why the whole economic anxiety argument doesn't make any sense to me, because it was the reign of error that put all that in place, and it just happened that it started falling apart before Bush could get out of town. But the fact of the matter is, it happened on Bush's watch, and Barack Obama, for whatever vaunted goals he may have had, instead wound up putting on his asbestos boots and having to stomp out fires.
Yeah.
And so how is it that people have economic anxiety from something Bush did to the economy, and yet they punished Hillary Clinton for it because the black guy? I mean, my head begins to ache just kind of walking through it, you know, talking to you.
It's what it is, I think, is I just think that it's these fascists who are gearing up. They've been waiting to put this in place for a long time. They perverted the truth so much that they convinced everybody that it was the opposition, which is the Democrats' fault, and they've been waiting to put this regime in place. They've been waiting for all the people who lived through the Great Depression to die off, people who were old enough to remember fascism rising around the world.
Exactly.
They waited for those people to die off so that they can say, so that there isn't enough 100-year-olds, because you have to be about 100 years old to be able to remember, to be of the age of conscience when that was going on. And there's not enough 100-year-olds in the world so that can, you know, form a coalition, stomp their foot, and say, we've seen this movie before. And I think that they've used every little excuse, every perversion, you know, just like Mitch McConnell projecting the obstruction thing and the Republicans, period, projecting that whole obstruction. They want people to forget. And the thing that scares me, Bob, is I think he is right. I think the American people aren't going to know. They're going to see the Democrats as obstructionists. Everything they've done has worked so far.
Well, and the media will be there to reinforce that idea.
They will.
Because the leading collaborators are going to be the for-profit media, let me rephrase that, are going to be the electronic media in this country. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, the full spectrum there. They are all going to be open collaborators with the Trump administration.
And they've already done it. I mean, you can see it right now with the headlines they're giving him. And you know what's interesting about the media, and I'll be real quick at this point, because you might want to, I don't know if you want to move on.
Well, I kind of get it. I got to get out of here, but no, go ahead.
I'll be very brief. I know you know that, and I think I heard you mention it one time not long ago, that there was a fascist attempted coup that happened in the 1930s.
Yes.
And there's congressional, you know, transcripts on it. Well, the guy, Smedley Butler, who foiled the whole thing, he was testifying, and in it he was talking, he was quoting what the person who, I forget the gentleman's name that approached him about this coup that tried to recruit him, said, "We have the newspapers," basically saying, "We have the media and stuff." And in my opinion, that basically meant the media is, we own the media, as the fascists owned the media at the time, and that they were going to go along with it. And in my opinion, I look and I say, what makes anybody think that they're not still, they don't still own the media? I just think these people were lurking in the shadows.
Well, they do still own the media.
For the right time. Exactly.
I mean, look, remember what Les Moonves said over at CBS. Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
Right. And that person should be brought up on treason charges when this whole thing comes to what I call the day of reckoning, where everybody finally finds out that this is a fascist regime, that they've screwed things up so bad, you know, that we're literally to the point where people are saying, who are we going to put in prison over this, you know, when things get that bad? People like that should be should be charged with treason. When we finally take back our country, which might not be in our lifetimes, I don't know, because when fascists take office or when fascists seize power, I don't think they do it with any intention of relinquishing it.
No, hell no. No. And look, we are one state away from a constitutional convention of the states. And if that comes about, look out, that's going to be a real party. John, this has been a magnificent conversation. I hope it will not be our last. And I hope you'll call back in. This has been a dandy. You're welcome here anytime.
Thanks. I mean, I was a little nervous, so if I talked a little at first, I might not have made some sense here and there.
You did great.
I'm a little scatterbrained. Okay. Well, it was great talking to you, Bob.
John, it was a real pleasure. Do not be a stranger, okay?
I won't. And everybody, don't forget to listen to the horn, support the horn, and contribute.
Thank you very kindly. Have a good evening. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
Wait a minute. Let's see. Cowbell for the first time caller. Thank you. Thank you, John, for calling in from Pennsylvania. I do have to get out of here because it's nasty and getting nastier. So I'm going to go and pick up Margie from Hellmart. And we'll be back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. Thanks again, Charlene, for jumping in on fundraising this evening. You were kind of by yourself on that. When we start up tomorrow, we'll have a fundraising goal of $385 to finish the first week of the new year in the okay, you know, without a deficit or anything, about $385. Depending on how many subscribers we have, maybe that'll go down by 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 bucks this evening. It'll be awfully helpful if it does. Thanks, everybody. I gotta roll. I wish I didn't, but I do. Y'all stay safe if you're in the snow area. And we will talk on the morrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks to all of you for the time you spend listening. Thank you very kindly to those of you who help keep all of this going. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.